number of your book, Mr. German, or do you know?
I don't have that right at hand.
I'm sure you can get it. Just go to Amazon.com. It's Thinking Like a Terrorist.
I'm not on the net, sir. Thank you. Five. This is a statement. I talked with somebody who may, it was suspect. He said that it was either the U.S. government or a major corporation. I'm not sure. No, it had to be a U.S. government. Has taken icebergs from the Northwest Passage, and they're using it to irrigate land in the United States. And he also said that either a corporation or the U.S. government was...
You know what, Judson, we got three more calls holding, and we only got about a minute left, and it's kind of off topic, but I want to thank you for your call. Let's go to the next caller. Go.
Give me a competency rating for the FBI between 1 and 10.
1 and 10, competency.
The agents on the street, I'd give them 8 to 10. Management, I'd give them 1 to 2.
1 to 2. I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Listen, if you enjoy what I do here on the Inside Scoop, you can hear my radio show every day at radioinsidescoop.com, 5 to 6 p.m. I always try to provide you all the news the government doesn't want you to know. And if you want to meet me, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and now journalist, you can do so by going to the Pacifica Gala on Saturday, December 15th. Ask to sit at my table, Mark Levine. I'll be glad to see you, to meet you. It's also a great way to support WPFW. Thank you for listening in. As I said, you can hear Dialogue every Wednesday at 11 and my show the second Wednesday of the month. Or you can find out more information at radioinsidescoop.com. Former agent Mike German, thank you for your service to your country. You do an amazing job.
This is the Quality News Network. The New York Times reports that according to an FBI report on the recent shooting deaths of Iraqi civilians by the private security company Blackwater, 14 of the 17 killings were unjustified. A spokesperson for Blackwater says the company supports stringent accountability. Three anti-war Democrats now say they will back the latest Iraq War funding bill that provides $50 billion for the war. It also calls for the troops to return home by the end of next year. The White House spokeswoman said President Bush will veto the bill. She claimed the Democrats are trying to, quote, appease radical groups, end quote. The new Attorney General, Michael Mukasey, was ceremonially sworn into office at the Justice Department today by Supreme Court Justice John Roberts. President Bush promises to help Mukasey rebuild the department, which has about a dozen vacancies at top leadership positions. Mr. Bush is expected to announce some nominees for those jobs tomorrow. Pakistan's President General Pervez Musharraf said today that by the end of this month he expects to step down as head of the military. He will start his new presidential term as a civilian, something President Bush and others have urged him to do. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto remains under house arrest. Musharraf accused her of fueling political unrest in the country. He also refused to lift emergency rule and expects to leave it in place through the elections in January. In Seoul today, the prime ministers of North and South Korea met to begin the first talks between the two countries in 15 years. It is seen as a major step towards reconciliation. New York's Governor Eliot Spitzer has given up on a controversial plan to issue driver's licenses to illegal immigrants. The Democratic governor accused the federal government of losing control of the borders and leaving states to deal with the consequences. However, Spitzer said overwhelming public opposition to the plan forced him to make the decision. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors approved legislation Tuesday that gives municipal ID cards to city residents whether they are in the country legally or not. The supervisor who authored it called it a smart public safety measure. A powerful earthquake struck northern Chile today. It was a magnitude 7.7. Two people were killed and more than 100 were injured. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business next.
It won't be long before every business and most individuals will have their own website. Whether they are looking for new clients or posting information of use to their colleagues, the website makes printing brochures and price sheets, press releases, and community notices virtually obsolete. With your own website, you can provide the latest information as it becomes available on new products and services, special offers, and company news. You no longer have to stare at errors or out-of-date information that was printed up in bulk. For organizations, you can bring your message to the public, just as you are knitting tighter relations with your supporters and staff. The people who can make all of that possible are at Byte Technology. Find out more. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178. Byte Technology, 656-9178.
The popular diabetes drug Avandia will carry a new warning label that it may or may not increase heart attack risk. The FDA says studies are too contradictory to determine for sure if the medication carries more risk than others' diabetes medicines. The chairman and chief executive of NYSE Euronext, John Fain, has been selected as the new chief executive of Merrill Lynch. Billionaire investor Warren Buffett testified at a Senate Finance Committee today about the estate tax. He is a critic of efforts to repeal it. Buffett said the phrase death tax is intellectually dishonest. United Airlines parent company UAL and Delta Airlines have reportedly been discussing a possible merger. The two airlines are the nation's second and third largest air carriers, and a combination would be subject to federal regulatory approval. Members of the United Automobile Workers Union have approved a new four-year contract at Ford Motor. The Labor Department says that wholesale level inflation increased 0.1% in October. Gold is trading at $814.70 an ounce. Light sweet crude is trading at $94.09 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 83 points, the NASDAQ down 29, and the S&P 500 down 11. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Midweek and welcome aboard. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. If there's any question, it's the 14th of November, 2007. You're there, I'm here. And we are indeed the world. The most... What? What shall we say? The most incredible media experiment in the history of broadcasting, internet, the internet is. The cutting edge. And you were a part of it for spending some time here. And, of course, I'm sure you well know, it is midweek. It's Wednesday. Wednesday doesn't, you know, Wednesday's not just another day around here. Wednesday, well.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, after all, Wednesday means prayer meeting here at Head On. So come on down to the altar, get your magic cookie, put your hands upon the subwoofer, and feel the healing waves of common sense flowing through you. I'm Brother Bob, and I lead the ceremonies here at the Cathedral of Common Sense, to which you are all welcome. And with it being prayer meeting Wednesday, I thought we might start with... something prayer meeting oriented, oddly enough. our good friend Joe Vecchio has mentioned a couple of times lately the prayers for rain in the great state of Georgia. And I feel for these people. We, too, here in West Virginia are in drought and have been. It's raining here. It's downright kind of warm and mushy outside right now. But Sonny Perdue, the right-wing governor of Georgia, a man I wouldn't cross the street to spit on, has decided he's watching the weather forecast for all he's worth, and he's going to have himself a public prayer ceremony. I don't know, maybe it happened today. I believe it was supposed to happen yesterday, but the weather forecaster said it didn't look like it was going to rain, so he called it off so as not to make God look bad. What goes on inside the skulls of these people? Honest to God, what goes on inside the skulls of these people? Well, I got to thinking about praying for rain. And, in fact, if you think back a few weeks ago, I shared with you, once again, Mark Twain's The War Prayer, in which he notes that if you pray for rain, you may wind up bringing devastating floods upon your neighbor. That prayers have unintended consequences, like all of human existence, to the extent that prayers are anything more than the stated wishes of wishful people who think that there's some God out there who just, you know, oh, you need rain. You know, that's the thing that drives me crazy about Sonny Perdue praying for rain. The idea, or anybody else for that matter, praying for rain, the idea that, that God needs some reminding. Well, oh, my goodness, the governor of Georgia's praying for rain. You know, Georgia had completely slipped my mind. I forgot to make it rain on the entire southeastern North American continent. And thank God, thank me for Sonny Perdue for reminding me that I need to make it rain there. Because I may have let this drought go on for generations if somebody hadn't reminded me. But he was praying loud enough, so, okay. We'll make it rain on Georgia. Do you see how stupid, how unutterably foolish, and in fact, what an offense to concepts of piety and regard for the deity that kind of behavior is? Oh, my God. So, given what's been on my mind lately since this past Saturday, yeah, you know, mountaintop removal coming to my little corner of the world, I got to thinking about Sonny Perdue praying for rain. And I wandered over to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You know, that's the great big old newspaper down in Atlanta. I wandered over to their website, and I fired off a little letter to the editor. And the letter to the editor that I fired off sounded like this. They got a 150-word limit. Now, bear in mind, when I write, I work backwards. Some people get an idea and try to build around it. I write everything I've got in my head, and then I pare it down. For me, 150 words is a daggum haiku, okay? It's work getting me down to 150 words. Otherwise, I couldn't do 3 hours of babble every night, okay? It just couldn't. So I fired off this little letter to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I wrote, "As I observe the fear that grips Georgia in the midst of drought, I wonder if Georgians think about what you do daily to us here in Appalachia as you blithely waste electricity, assuring the permanent destruction of our mountains in order to get the coal you crave. As our mountains are blasted away forever, our neighbors' wells poisoned, our communities turned to ghost towns, our valleys filled, our wildlife slaughtered, our watersheds eternally buried for your energy hunger, an idea takes shape. When Georgians pray for rain, you would do well to lift up your eyes unto the hills. Here in these hills that provide the coal that powers your world, we Appalachians ache for compassion. Those who would pray for the mercy of the Almighty would do well to exhibit it to. Tell that to Sonny Perdue. Learn about mountaintop removal. Go to ilovemountains.org. And I found out this afternoon that that's going to be published. Now, this is not in the way of going, yay me, woo! But, you know, a lot of people read the letters to the editor. I hope somebody will read that. I hope a lot of people will read that. And I hope they'll think. Because, as the novelist Tom Robbins has put in the past, everything is part of it. The drought in Georgia, the drought here in West Virginia, is part of a greater climate activity. It's part of greater climate change. Who is to say if in 500, 1,000 years, who is to say if winds will whistle down through a barren, sand-blasted region that once was the burgeoning, growing, bustling southeastern United States? Who is to say? There's every chance that might turn out to be true. And it could be that in another 1,000 years, where I sit here up on our little plateau in the Appalachians, might well be beachfront property. Hell, it might be underwater for all I know. I think the beachfront property is a little bit more likely, just given the lay of the land. Who's to say? And it's not so much who's to say, it's to say who's to think about it. I think about it. You think about it. The Sonny Perdues of the world don't think about it. They just think about things that, well, Sonny Perdue in particular thinks about wishing he could figure out a way to get a pipe into the Tennessee River so he could drain the sucker. Because they need development. They need to, oh my goodness, they got to have growth. The one thing I have read, the one thing that more than anything else allowed for the development, the growth of the so-called Sun Belt and the Deep South, was the invention of air conditioning. Air conditioning, of course, was predicated upon the expansion of electric power services. That electricity was predicated upon the ever-increasing mining of Appalachian coal. You see, we West Virginians, we Appalachians, we actually live fairly lightly on the land. Unlike many other places, it's nothing to drive around West Virginia in high summer and see gardens frequently in backyards, in fields, see us growing our own food. Air conditioning came late to West Virginia because we really didn't have that great a need of it except for maybe 1 month out of the year, August, early September. The rest of the time, we got along fairly well without it. Not so the hot, sunny South. But we lived fairly lightly on the land, and we worked to tear our coal out of the ground and ship it to places like Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi, so that those states could sit in cool, air-conditioned comfort. Or, moreover, be comfortable enough to be able to stand to live there and not simply die from high summer's heat. We live lightly on the land. Now, I'm not talking about coal companies. I'm not talking about huge banking interests. I'm not talking about corporations and Walmarts. I'm talking about ordinary, average West Virginia families who, for generations up until fairly recent years, lived lightly, gently upon the land. Not so much with great mansions. Whatever housing we could scrabble together, whatever living we could scrabble out of the earth, we lived that way. So that development and growth could take place in more favored locales. And I was at cross purposes and of two minds as I wrote this today, because I was afraid it sounded bitter. I was afraid that it might sound to someone who was worrying about whether or not their lawn was going to burn up as though somehow we here in the hills were gloating. We aren't. We're drought-stricken ourselves. Our gardens burned up in the summer sun, too. We have our water emergencies. But these are, in fact, cyclical things. They are functions of climate change. And while the water has gone down in Lake Lanier in Georgia, it has gone down more notably to zero in the wells of families in Boone County, Raleigh County, McDowell County, Mingo County, Wyoming County, Logan County, because those wells have been poisoned and humans may not drink from them anymore. Not at their peril. Entire communities have been ruined by want of water because mine companies, hell-bent, literally hell-bent, I say to you this prayer meeting Wednesday, hell-bent on getting our coal for their needs, have destroyed our wells. In ancient cultures, such as those of the Middle East, the poisoning of a well was sufficient to start a war that would blaze across hundreds of miles. Because those ancients realized, as we do not, that the most precious resource on this planet is water that is fit to put into the human body. We have sacrificed our mountains. We have sacrificed our way of life, our lives, our ways of life. We have sacrificed our water. We have sacrificed our air. We have sacrificed literally everything that we have to give so that a place like Atlanta can be lit up like a Christmas tree every night. Yes, we have. And so I am not nearly... I would not have it taken as some sort of gloating. As I noted in the letter, we Appalachians ache for compassion. And those who would pray for the mercy of the Almighty would do well to exhibit it too.
God darn it, you use your tongue prettier than a $20 whore.
Is it wrong to feel this way? Doesn't every human being have a breaking point? Doesn't every human community have a point at which it says no more? What about us? What duty, and I ask this sincerely, what duty do people who live in Appalachia owe to people in Georgia, in Alabama, in Mississippi? What duty? What duty, then, do Georgians, Mississippians, Floridians, Carolinians, Alabamians owe to we Appalachians? I don't speak as a West Virginian. I speak as in region, Appalachia. once upon a time, we lived in a country where we would say, well, we are all Americans. And when America prospers, we all prosper. But that is not the state of affairs in 2007. That is not the state of affairs at all. In 2007, we stand a house divided against itself, in which the sunny South says, more, more, more. And Appalachia bleeds until it is pale, giving more, more, more. So I'll probably go somewhere and try to find a copy of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for Sunday. See if my humble little letter actually makes it to print. The follow-up might be interesting as well. I'm sure there will be great bitterness. By some people who feel that Appalachian coal is Georgia, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, Mississippi, Tennessee's right. And I would not offend anyone deliberately, but it's a mindset that has obtained there. And, you know, I grew up in Alabama, so, you know, I kind of got a right to say this stuff. I lived in Atlanta, so I kind of got a right to say this stuff. It's a mindset that has obtained there since the first white man set foot in the region, that some other human being from somewhere else has always owed him a living. Mississippians, Alabamians, Georgians, South Carolinians, North Carolinians, Tennesseans, Kentuckians, all had a right to be supported by human beings who were designated as only 3/5 thereof, and that went on for a couple of hundred years. And now, you see, you got to understand, Atlanta cannot provide for Atlanta's own power. Charlotte cannot power herself. Columbia and Charleston, South Carolina cannot power themselves. Nashville cannot power itself. Huntsville, Alabama cannot power itself, nor can Memphis. Once upon a time, they were in a place where many of these towns that I've just mentioned could, because they used hydroelectric power. But no, growth, 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 development, 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 development. More, 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 gimme, 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 gimme. And who does the giving and who does the getting? You see, for the southeastern United States, Appalachia is now, shall we say, the cotton chopping class. All those cities would burn up in summer were it not for Appalachia. And insofar as they have shown no mercy whatsoever toward us, it is rather difficult for me to look with any favor upon the hypocritical cries of a sunny Purdue as he waits for the weatherman to tell him a propitious day upon which to pray for rain, so that he may look like he stands in some special relationship to the Almighty. Screw you, sunny Purdue. This is all tied together. And you see, the nature of the national economy is such that if we do not stand together, we shall hang separately. And a house divided against itself cannot stand. And the Atlantas and Memphises and Nashvilles and Birminghams and Mobiles, the Savannahs and Charlestons and Charlottes, the Richmonds and the Columbias cannot forever drag it, their very existence from these hills and not expect at some point to pay the piper. Because this coal will not last forever. Oh, Bob, we got 500 years of coal. That was at usage rates predicted 20 years ago, and it's grown exponentially. And at what cost? And to whose burden? I read about Sonny Perdue and his rain prayer, and I mean it got all over me like a case of the shingles. Praying for rain. Let him pray. But you know what? It could rain on Sonny Perdue until it was up to his chinny chin chin. And if he turned on the light switch and nothing happened, all the rain in the world wouldn't save him. So we'll just sit here in West Virginia. We'll sit there in Eastern Kentucky. We'll sit there in Southwestern West Virginia. Boulders will fly off of mountains and squash two-year-olds in their bed. Families on ground for 300 years will be run off. Men, women will be crippled from their efforts to provide electricity to these places, and not even so much as a thank you. And here in West Virginia, we'll try to take care of ourselves and you know, hope that maybe someday we can get some windmills put up. But you know how that goes. You can hope in one hand and in the other as long as your congressman is busting his ass to make sure that he keeps windmills from going up in your state. You want pleas to the Almighty? In 1906, Mother Jones came to the New River coal fields and said, "When I die, I will tell Almighty God about West Virginia, because it is obvious that no one else ever has." So that's how prayer meeting begins tonight. How it ends, I don't know. A lot of that depends on you, of course. A lot of that depends on where you want to take the program. Where do you want to take the program? I got a lot of stuff here. I got a good reason. Another one. I got another good reason for becoming a vegan like Dennis Kucinich and Bill Maher. I got a very good reason for it. And we'll get to that in due time. But more than anything else, I await your calls. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. You know, email rolls in to bob@headonradio.com, and the chat room's always there. This is a true multimedia experience. Avail yourself of it. And above all, welcome to prayer meeting for a Wednesday night. A Wednesday night that has been a gray November day. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's the kind of gray November day that washes away reflections in the eyes of hotel porters. And the lattice wooden benches by the sea contain no travelers or Irish lady authors. And the girl on the radio.
raincoat, walks the lanes of Brighton with a collar turned against the wind, and hovers in the doorways of second-hand bookshops amongst the dust and fading print. And you're not the one she's thinking of, and you're not the one she really wants. Just a point along the line she's leaving from.
When I'm president, I'm going to say to members of Congress and members of my administration, including my cabinet, I'm glad that you have health care coverage and your family has health care coverage. But if you don't pass universal health care by July of 2009, in 6 months, I'm going to use my power as president to take your health care away from you. There's no excuse for politicians in Washington having health care when you don't have health care.
I'm John Edwards, and I approve this message.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey. Thanks for lending an ear.
Hi, you've reached the Johnsons. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about the apartment. Please give me a call back at 2.
Hi, hello. This is Rafael Paredes. Please call me back at 718.
This is Jeannie Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can please call me back.
Hello, my name's Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello. This is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well, you're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
I'm trying to be less polite. I'm saying what I really think. The president's a fool. I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave. I Christian wrong. Let the people marry, tell me why are you so worried. Let me sing it to you in this song.
Ain't that the truth, Will Kimbrough? Ain't that the truth? Trying to kill democracy. 20 minutes before the hour right here on Prayer Meeting Wednesday. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. You know that. And this is my least favorite part of the program. It is the day before we are halfway through the month of November, and it's time for a fundraising update. Ah, oh, please, don't just walk away from the computer while I do this. Don't walk away from the speakers. Don't turn them down. Don't go play Pop It. You know, we're fact-based here. We deal with reality. And sometimes reality is hard, and we are in the hardest part of the year. People going absolutely bats, trying to deal with the holidays, the Thanksgiving and the consumer season, holiday season, Christmas season, my left hind foot. It's the consumer season, sunshine. And from now until the new year, you are going to be bombarded with assaults on your decency, assaults on your integrity, telling you that you need to buy this, and oh look, there's a new that. And a new car. Those are the ones that always drove me crazy, the Lexus commercials. Hi, honey, I love you so much. Here, look. And she looks out, and there's a big car, there's a $50,000 car with a red ribbon around it on Christmas morning. Who lives like that? I guess some people do, or they wouldn't advertise that way. But you're going to be bombarded with reasons to go out and spend your money, and it's going to make... You know, most of it's designed. It's not designed to... All appeals to human yearning, all appeals to commercial desire, are in essence pornographic. Because they make you feel bad for not having more stuff. Until we get to the place in this life where our stuff owns us. And I am among the guilty. We all have our little things that we, you know, the stuff we like to have around us. Imagine John Fox without a guitar. In my world, John Fox needs a guitar. Imagine, you know what I mean? Imagine me without this microphone. I'm very much attached to the stuff that makes this network happen. Because, to one degree or another, I have allowed it to define me, as opposed to defining myself from the inside out. We mostly define ourselves from the outside in. And at the end of it all, we're left with what's inside, and what's outside doesn't matter a whit. That's the kind of stuff that sort of got driven home to me, you know, going through my parents' stuff. Precious stuff. Stuff that still means something to me, to my sisters. And we divvied it up. And, I don't know. It's the 14th day of November. We have to raise $2,000 a month. We barely made it last month. Here on the 14th day of November, almost smack dab in the middle of the month, and a tough month it is, and a tough month will come, and another tough month after that, and another tough month after that, as we get through the so-called holy days. My ass. It's the middle of November. We haven't cracked $500 yet. And I see days like this, months like this, starts like this. And I see a time not long distant when this stuff that I'm so attached to won't matter. because I won't be able to do any of this. I won't be able to bring you any of the other programs on the horn. And it'll just be an idea that came and went. And then somewhere down the road, and this is the part that wakes me up with the cold shivers in the middle of the night. A year from now, 2 years from now, somebody will come along and say, you know what, we've got this great idea. We're going to start an internet radio station. But we only need $20 million so we can pay celebrities to do it. And it'll be on CNN and CNBC and MSNBC and Headline News and the Fox. And oh, new liberal radio station starts up. And oh, this is it's genius, leveraging the power of the internet to deliver a radio network that will be dedicated only to the internet. They're geniuses. And I think the day that I hear that report, I will drive calmly and casually over to the New River Gorge Bridge and leap. Because it's an idea that I had, it's an idea that Ben Birch had, it's an idea that grew in the brain of Wayne Rebich, it's an idea that was fostered by John Fox and Peter Godbold. And we couldn't come up with $2,000 a month to keep it going. So, I tell you what. I'm going to make this promise to you. And I'm going to keep this promise. It's the 14th day of November, 2007. We're not a quarter of the way to where we need to be to keep this all going. And I'm not going to say another damned word about it for the rest of the month. Because you know what? I don't have time to. I don't have time for this. There's too much stuff going on. There's too much stuff that matters. There's too many connections to be made. There are too many conversations to be had. I'm not going to say another word about it. If we meet our goal, we meet our goal. If we don't, we don't. And we'll keep on going until the stuff goes out the back door on hand trucks. Is that okay? So, you know, and this is not me griping at the 25 or 30 or 40 people that are making this go right now. This is to the other 19,960 people who aren't. Or whatever the number is. If this has value to you, please, whatever you can spare, we would appreciate. And, you know, we've told you what it goes for. It goes to keep the mics hot. It goes to keep the internet stream open. It goes to build the new computer before the old computer goes and dies, like it nearly did last night. It goes toward ideas of growth, video, studios, keeping things going until we can find somebody out there, venture capitalist, investment, whatever, who's this, to pick this up and take it forward. So that's it. I am not going to say another word about this for the rest of the month. If you guys want to call in and talk about it, that's okay. But this is the last pitch. Okay, it just is, and I'm not going to do it anymore. Let's go to the phones. Who have I got?
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, Bob?
Yeah.
It's Kev from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah, if I may make a suggestion, and okay, I have to volunteer to bring up the subject of fundraising.
Okay.
I notice on the White Rose website, there's no mailing address for people to send checks.
Well, White Rose is separate from what we do here at the Horn, Kevin.
Oh, or even at the Horn or Head On. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, at the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website, there is a button there's a clicker or something that says Contact Us.
Oh, Okay, because I could tell you right now, like, a lot of possibly older listeners do not feel comfortable doing charges over the phone. They really don't.
Or PayPal.
Or PayPal, and they would write a check and send it to a direct address.
Well, maybe we need to put that address on the main banner. I don't know.
Yeah, if I may suggest that, because, you know, I've been getting my mom to listen to the show, and she's starting to, you know, enjoy it. And, you know, she may just write a check out there. You know, I'm trying to convince her, because right now I'm kind of, you know, going through my stuff. But
I know. I understand.
But she doesn't feel comfortable swiping her card online, sort of say.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the older people, a lot of older progressives, you know, my mother knows a lot of people who are, you know, in their 60s, 70s, you know, people older than us. And a lot of, you know, this progressive movement is nothing new. It's been going back since the turn of the century. I have a neighbor who was talking about the Spanish Civil War and how they used to go to rallies in Brooklyn supporting the Spanish Republican Army, which was the, you know, and he's a very old-time progressive. And again, a lot of these senior citizens just don't feel comfortable. They're not comfortable online because he's just so amazed that you can listen to the radio through a computer to begin with.
So am I.
Yeah. Well, you know, I kind of grew up with this stuff. You know, computers have been around since I was a baby, let's say. But, like, it's that previous generation who just doesn't, and maybe we should kind of put that address or P.O. box or whatever out there for those older listeners.
Not a bad idea, and I should probably mention it on the air as well, so I'll do that now. It is head-on, 1038 North Eisenhower, E-I-S-E-N-H-O-W-E-R, North Eisenhower Drive, P as in Paul, M as in Mary, B as in boy, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, Beckley, West Virginia, WV, 25801 is the zip code, and that's where the snail mail goes. And you know, I appreciate you bringing that up, and like I said, Kevin, I want to be called on this stuff. If I get under people's skin, if it irritates people, I want to know about it because I don't know any other way to talk about this. I wish I wasn't, but I am, and that's the only way we can do this.
The thing is, you're not getting on them because you know I've probably benefited a lot from listening to the show and the things we've talked about online, and I'm so looking forward because I think, you know, the community I live in here in Brooklyn, we will bring a whole new demographic onto Head On.
Yeah.
And I know, like, some of the most politically active people here are our senior citizens, and they are very progressive. You know, they are of a different generation, but they are very progressive.
I'm told that there's also a button on the website that says to donate by mail, and it's right below the PayPal buttons.
Oh, okay.
And it takes them right to the snail mail address.
Oh, okay. Well, what I may have to do is take a look at it and try and explain it better.
Well, yeah, just look around because I know, bless his heart, he stays so doggone busy, but John Fox has made several changes to the website to try to make that more reachable to people.
Yeah. But, you know, on the air, you know, my suggestion is at least once or twice, just blurt out the address.
Good idea.
I think it couldn't hurt. You know. And about the whole stuff thing, you know, I totally relate to you. I was having a conversation about it, and I'm not going to stay long. I just wanted to, my primary goal tonight was just to make that suggestion. It's amazing how we are, our stuff ends up owning us.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. And, you know, going through the whole transition that I'm going through in my life, I got rid of my entire CD collection, which was accumulating to 5,000 CDs.
Holy cow. Like I said, I'm the first one to admit that my stuff owns me, and
Well, I put it on iTunes.
So
it up on my computer.
All right, so it wasn't a purge.
It wasn't a purge. It was just the physical presence up there, and now I'm at the point in my life where I'm just like, the only thing I want to accumulate now is, like, paintings and books.
Well, you know, those are hard to have on a computer.
No, and they're not really, you know, those are the only physical things that I really need in my life right now. You know, I have clothes. You know, of course, you're going to always have to buy food. I'm getting rid of my car.
And you're just going to use the local transit there around Brooklyn?
Yeah, if I need to get a car, I'll go to Zipcar. You ever heard of them?
Yeah, I have.
And, you know, they're pretty big in the Northeast now. And I'm just going to, if I need access to a car, I'll just rent that on an hourly basis, do what I have to do, and turn it back in, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think Joe talked about a little bit of this last night. That's probably where the future's going.
I hope so. I sincerely hope so. If not, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. You know, we are going to be in a hell of a lot of trouble because, you know, we are leading to a road of ruin, whether people know it or not, living this suburban so-called American dream lifestyle.
Well, the dream has every indication of somewhere along the road becoming a nightmare. And see, the thing is, it's a question of scope, Kevin, and I don't know if I ever really, or perspective perhaps, I don't know that I ever really, really get it out well, but by virtue of the fact that as a kid I wanted to be an archaeologist and stuff like that, And because, you know, I actually pursued it in school and worked on a couple of digs and yada, 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 I read things about cultures, you know, 4,500 years ago. Well, there's a story out today, and it comes out of southern Serbia, and it is about what may well be the first metal furnace in human history. And it goes back to about 5,500 BC, and it deals with village, town, whatever, that lasted for 1,500 years. Just a little Neolithic town that lasted for 1,500 years. We barely have a town on this continent that has lasted for 500.
Yeah.
And yet we can't think 30 years down the doggone road.
Well, that's an indication, you know, United States. To me, when it comes to a global community, the United States is the Paris Hilton of the world. I have all this money, and it's very immature. And I think we need to go through, I think, the kind of suffering that, let's say, England, Germany, Japan has gone through, much more older countries, where they've had periods of prosperity and decline. You know, and the reality.
Well,
the thing is, though,
Kevin, some of that has actually taken place here. We had an economy in the United States that, from the very days of our founding, was on a constant boom and bust roller coaster.
Well,
yet we think we learned something from it, and after the Great Depression, things were put in place to try to stop that kind of thing from happening. And yet the lesson we apparently learned from it was, okay, it's not going to happen so much now, so we can get more stuff.
Yeah, but I don't think we really learned it because, you know, first of all, a lot of people don't realize the United States has only been a world power for about 60 years.
We certainly weren't the motivating world power at the time of World War I, no.
And we weren't even during the, you know, during the 20s and 30s. It was just after World War II, which brought on the military-industrial complex to take on the Soviets, that we became this massive world power, world economic military
power. And it happens as a direct result of our commitment to creating a military-industrial complex.
Yes.
And there, what you're talking about right now, Kevin, is freighted with about the 6 hours' worth of conversation radio because, among other things, on the same day that George Bush vetoed $600 billion. I don't even remember the exact number, but it was a bill that went to health and human resources programs, labor programs, medical related, healthcare related programs. He vetoed that. You know what a jerk. I mean,
this family's just a bunch of mean spirited, you know,
jerks.
Yeah, and that's all.
And at the same time calls for $471 billion in more military spending?
Well, I don't think he...
You want to sit him down with just surround him with ammunition and say, eat it, George. Just eat bullets. See if you can live on war stuff.
Yeah, well, like I said, the family's insane, and, you know, this is going back to the great-grandfather. The family has some serious issues, and frankly, you know, I feel quite sorry for them. I really do at this point. You know, I used to hate them, and I just realize how pathetic they really are. And, you know, I wish I could play a soundbite for you where they say there's no need to slay the wicked because the wicked ends up destroying themselves,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And eventually they're going to burn out and destroy themselves. So there's no
but
need
they'll take a bunch of us with them.
Well, unfortunately, that's usually the case, but, you know, I really don't know. Like Joe said, I really hope we adjust to that future where people are going to be... Because the reality is, humans are only meant to take up a small amount of space on this planet.
For the most part, human population on planet Earth has hovered around 10 million or so up until the rise of agriculture.
Yeah, but even with all that, because they, Tom Hartman was saying before 1800, there was only 1 billion people on the planet. At 1900, there was 2 billion, and then the other 4 billion just came along within the past 100 years. Am I correct in saying
that? Well, at one point in time, and I forget exactly what the benchmark is, there hadn't been a billion people on the planet.
And
if you take every human and hominid species there is, there hadn't been a billion of us.
Exactly. But even within that 1 billion... And even today, if you look at our patterns, for the most part, we gather in small amount of spaces. It's just the impact we make on the greater environment. Because look at it. If you were to go to outer space and look at the areas that are really lit, in let's say take the United States, people are clustered in the Northeast and in California. And then the Chicago, and you'll see a couple little dots throughout the rest of America, but you see a vast amount of blackness in that, too. And are you following what I'm saying?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
And it just goes to prove that we are, by nature, social beings, and we need to count on one another. Okay? And that I think, like, the suburbanites and the exurbanites and these people who are buying the Mac mansions are going against human nature in many ways.
Well, it is not human. Isolation is not human nature. You could say, things like gated communities. Gated communities are a throwback to the ancient human hilltop fortress or whatever, but usually in those hilltop fortresses you had all strata of society. You had craftsmen, you had people who grew things, you had people who made things, built things, and people who, you know, ruled things. And everybody was together in the fort. McMansion communities, with their gates and their private security firms and so forth, are an attempt to avoid our humanness.
Yeah. Well, you know what the great irony is with the gated communities now?
What's that?
A lot of them, because of the real estate bust, a lot of these developers are sectionating.
Are they really?
Oh, yeah.
You mean those people are going to move into our community?
Yes, they are. It is the funniest idea. And I tell people gated communities don't work because the barbarians will always...
Well, you know, if you can't bust through the wall, you can always bribe the gatekeeper.
Exactly.
I mean, the ancient Chinese found that out with their wall. Build a wall you can see from space and know the barbarians couldn't get through it, so they bribed they bought the key.
Yeah.
My goodness.
So, it's that's the great irony of these so-called gated communities, is that people, they're sectionating out the houses.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that'd be fun to see. I'm sorry. Yeah. I guess I'm just mean-spirited tonight, Kevin.
Mean-spiritedness begets mean-spiritedness,
And that's what I was trying to get across with that letter. Think about the interconnectedness of things once in a while.
Yeah.
It's big news. I just got a email from our friend Sue down on Big Coal River talking about the story she saw about the mansion in Atlanta that uses 440,000 gallons of water a month.
Oh, wow.
Fountains, pools, swimming pools, lily ponds, I don't know. But you know what? I'm supposed to feel bad for those people. Wonder what their electric bill's like. There's probably a mountain's worth of coal in their electric bill.
Well, you see, that's the thing. It all boils down to...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think in the past 30 years, the rise of televangelism and the so-called prosperity gospel, prosperity at what cost?
Exactly, and what I was going to say is, that house that uses 440,000 gallons of water, maybe they'll cut back to 220,000 gallons. But of course, who drought really hurts?
Poor people.
Damn straight. The people in the McMansions will find a way to have water.
Yeah, they'll buy shipping crates of bottled water or something, kind of like Charles.
Oh, Muffy, we're going to have to water the lawn with Evian.
Yeah, you remember, did you ever watch MASH?
Sure.
You remember the episode when they didn't get their water supplies and all the water there had to be restricted to, like, drinking and only for the patients?
Mm-hmm.
And then, Charles Emerson Winchester, the resident snob now, he was amazingly clean and all that stuff.
Because he was cheating.
In spring water.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's what, we'll see that again. Hey, Kevin, we got to hit the news. Ran a little bit late, but good to hear from you, and thanks for the ideas. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Take care.
Right.
Bye now. Chime right in if you want to. If I'm mean-spirited, tell me. I don't aim to be a jerk. I mean, there are enough jerks in the world. I don't need to add to the mathematics of it. But somewhere along the line, somebody has got to get folks to think a little bit beyond next week. Maybe next century would be nice. And, that's what people like Al Gore are doing. They're thinking next century. Al Gore is thinking about what the continent looks like 500 years, 1,000 years from now. Oddly enough, I'm enough of a geek that I do too. But chime right in, 877-443-2366. That's toll free. On your nickel, 304-658-5453, if you've got a long-distance, unlimited calling plan, do it that way. But for heaven's sakes, come on down to the altar here in Brother Bob's Cathedral of Common Sense. It's prayer meeting Wednesday, and you are welcome. This is The Horn.
You say you see what's under. This is the Quality News Network. Despite a White House veto threat, House Democrats defiantly moved ahead with a $50 billion spending bill, funding meant for the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. The legislation includes a call for U.S. troops to begin withdrawing from Iraq 30 days after its passage. Most troops would then have to be back home by late December of next year, a notion that continues to chafe President Bush. A newly issued report from federal investigators says that the shooting deaths of at least 14 Iraqi civilians in Haditha were unjustified. Security guards from Blackwater, USA are being blamed for those deaths, which U.S. authorities now say violated rules of deadly force. Blackwater Worldwide said the company supports, quote, stringent accountability, unquote, for any wrongdoing in the matter. The headquarters of Iraq's most influential Sunni cleric group taken by storm today. Iraqi authorities seized the office held by the Association of Muslim Scholars, accusing the group of publicly supporting Sunni insurgent goals and al-Qaeda in Iraq. Attorney General Michael Mukasey officially sworn in today during a formal ceremony. It was the second swearing-in held for the former federal justice selected to replace former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf says he intends to step down from his military post by the end of the month. He says he'll run for re-election as President of Pakistan as a private citizen when balloting is held in February. President Bush has encouraged the latest move, but also wants Musharraf to end martial law and hold elections at their earlier scheduled time in early January. In Seoul, Korea today, the prime ministers of North and South Korea met to begin the first talks between the two countries in 15 years. It is seen as a major step towards reconciliation between the two countries. New York's Governor Eliot Spitzer giving up on a controversial plan to issue driver's licenses to illegal immigrants as a way to bring them out of the shadows and make the roads safer. The Democratic governor accused the federal government of losing control of the borders, leaving states to deal with the consequences. And a powerful earthquake struck northern Chile today, measuring 7.7 on the Richter scale, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. It said that hundreds are reported trapped. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check science and business news just ahead.
Living our lives in a civil fashion is a declaration of intent. It says we are ready to put our better selves forward for the well-being of the community. It's like romance. When you fall in love, you are on your best behavior. The delight in making a loving connection with someone brings out the best in us, naturally. It is natural to acknowledge our fellow human beings with a nod of the head or a smile, to show them the respect we would want them to show us. The more we are civil with strangers and with those who already know us, the healthier a spirit we create for ourselves, for each other, and the surrounding community. George Washington, the founder of a great nation, declared, "Every action done in company ought to be with some sign of respect to those that are present." Civility is essential to community health. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
A Harvard biologist says scientists have discovered as few as 10% of plants, animals, and minerals now living on Earth. Edward O. Wilson says when trying to diagnose the health of an ecosystem, scientists are, quote, in the position of a doctor trying to treat a patient knowing only 10% of organs, unquote. A technical breakthrough could bring human cloning a step closer. A team of U.S. scientists have, for the first time, created cloned embryos from an adult monkey. Scientists were able to extract stem cells from some of the embryos and then develop them into mature heart and nerve cells in the laboratory. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said he'll take steps to break down the secrecy around the Federal Reserve. One of those measures will be to inform the country about the economy's health four times a year, as opposed to just twice a year. Members of the United Automobile Workers Union approving a new four-year contract at Ford Motor, a 79% approving the agreement, which is the widest margin of any auto company. Light sweet crude oil trading at $94.09 a barrel, gold at $814.70 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 76 points to end at 13,231, NASDAQ down 29 points, the S&P 500 off 10. There's always more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty then, a quarter past the hour. Yeah, so we, you know how it goes. Seems like every time I get a little bit nasty, I wind up hearing that civility commercial in the middle of the Quality News Network cast. And inevitably, that enforces guilt. Oh, too much guilt. I don't know, you know, we ex-Southern Baptists, we're not known for our guilt, but wow, I can sure do it with the best of them. Let's go to the phones. Kate is calling. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay.
Question. Hi, long time listener. No.
Don't you dare. Thanks for taking my call.
First, I want to say hey to Kevin's mom. That's so very cool. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Head On. And Jesse's listening on iPod while he's out there pounding nails. Huh?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Kid A, yeah, and I think Kid A is up in Ohio, and he iPods too, so hey, hey, hey. Interesting that you would bring up this subject. I've been kind of thinking about rice bowls all day and how we're all connected and the Atlanta water thing and how they're exploiting resources and stuff. And, you know, it was interesting that you said you're not going to bring this subject up anymore for the rest of the month. Well, that doesn't mean that I have to shut up. So,
no, it doesn't, but
I understand your reasoning because it
feels like it gets in the way, Kate.
I know. I often wake up thinking about this very subject, and I just sigh, and I think, God, why don't I get a life? Well, I guess I've got a life. This is it, and I don't want to be too long here because I bore myself talking, and I was taught in persuasive speech that anything over 5 minutes is bullshit or theater. So,
oh well, thanks a lot. Now I'll, you know, let me just turn it off and go home.
I said theater.
I know.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Well, no. I mean, I know what you mean, but no, take all the time you need because it's not theater. It's not even theater.
It's a big bad drama. Besides, it took me like 5 tries to get through John Galt's speech, so I have a short attention span.
Oh God, don't! I've gotten through the day without aspirin so far.
Okay, and I was I choked this afternoon when I heard Glenn Beck being advertised in some slot in Randy Rhoads' show. I don't know if it was from Nova M or if it was from Air America or if it came in out of the Cosmos or something. And so Glenn Beck they do this little bit about his show, and then they
pardon me while I pluck my eyeballs out, dip my head in a bucket of lye and run off a cliff. Oh, you're kidding.
But here's the irony, right? Immediately, it wasn't even like a 2-second lapse between the bits, was for KY massage jelly. And I thought, all right.
Yeah, you'll be needing it.
Somebody screwed up there. Oh,
well,
God.
That sounds, but that, you know, okay, geeky moment of inside baseball, Kate. That sounds like, that sounds like the national part of the advertising block, so. Because KY jelly doesn't usually buy in an individual market.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm so sick of them. Anyway,
was it followed by a spot for Trojans?
No, I don't know. They might have been. I
because I mean, you know, Glenn Beck, KY jelly, and Trojan. Yeah, trifecta.
Yeah. No, it was that KY massage jelly they're advertising.
Oh, okay.
Romance back into your life. Some shit.
Or as we call it around here, Kentucky jelly. Hadn't got much flavor on bread, I can tell you.
Yeah, this stuff might be flavored. I don't know. Anyway, I want to get out of here and quit using my phone minutes. But about the fundraising thing, and about rice in our bowl, and about giving up, sharing what we've got, and we've got, you know, in this case, it's like in democracy, it's one person, one vote. And but it seems, and we often spend a lot of time talking about the problem and not the solution. You know, I feel like I spend time frozen in apathy and procrastination. Somebody else will do it. My little bitty $10 won't matter. Besides that, just like my vote won't count, blah, blah. Well, we get the radio we deserve. I mean, if we're not going to pay for it, and we have no other progressive outlet. Besides, we subscribe to Sirius. We subscribe to XM. Have to subscribe to Nova M. And they've only got one local host on their whole program. All their weekend people are donated or they're pay for play. So we don't even have a, I don't even talk about Air America. I don't even know who they are, but you know, they're neither here nor there for me, but we just don't have any other progressive outlet. Even NPR couldn't make it on listener support with the government funding. They had to go to Big Oil and Walmart.
Well, sure. I think I mentioned I was driving down the road the other day and I heard, you know, this segment of Your Environment Today brought to you by Northrop Grumman. Enjoy your environment before we start bombing it. Yeah.
Yeah, but I heard you say that, and I thought, yeah, but they did. They're doing a lot of work down in Pascagoula, man. Don't stir up the hornet nest. a lot of people got wet, and their mamas got their house damaged and ripped away and stuff. And so Northrop Grumman was doing a lot of work for Jackson County Coalition and the 100 Homes people and stuff. But and I know times are hard and people don't have anything to give, and we've got donator disaster fatigue, and you know, damn sure I do. I'm homeless and live on disability, and I, you know, sometimes I just hoard my little green thing that blips between two computers until I realize there's no such thing as money besides it's printed in Korea for less than 10 cents a piece because it's cheaper to do it there. We outsource the printing of our money, and so there's not even any such thing as money. And so a lot of times when I need money, I go find somebody to give away what I've got. So, because I know that in the universal law, the cosmic law, that what you give away, this is prayer meeting, but when I give away one thing, I get it back 10 times. And that's, I know that's biblical, but it also works. It's something about the law of physics and spiritual consciousness. It just works. It worked for me last week. I got, it's a long story, but I walked away and thought about it, and I thought, God dang, that just gave me back about 20-fold for everything I've donated to the horn. I'll be damned. I mean, it's not real cash, but it eventually will, you know. But so what I was thinking about rice bowls, when I walk around with my own rice in my own little bowl, and I don't want to give anybody any of it, and it's mine, you know, it's my stuff, it's my rice. Well, if I just give away two or three grains of rice, put in somebody else's bowl, I don't even notice that it's gone.
Sure.
You know, and the more rice I give away, the emptier my bowl gets, and then the universe has more room to fill it up with more rice.
And it's all seeds.
Huh?
It's all seeds. Dry beans are seeds.
Yeah.
Dry, unprocessed, it's seeds. It makes more.
It absolutely makes more. And so,
Kate, I know you want to keep it short and everything, but you can't just throw this stuff out there and walk away, and leave me going. You know, the fact is, you know, we premiered a new show last weekend.
Oh, he kicks ass. Oh, man, it's so good. God, that show was good.
The Sowards Report, yeah, and it just blew me away. And this, and you know how that show came to be?
Yes, I remember.
Yeah, it was just a chance conversation outside the reception of the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner.
Yep.
And it was like, oh, you do that? I do that. Cool, let's do it together.
Yeah.
And that's the way this stuff grows. That's the way it folds in on itself and then expands outward.
And people like him, they have, and we have like Pacifica and all, and the radio program. We had, there was a chaos in Olympia, Washington at Evergreen State College. They have the college station. Those journalism and communications programs have been up and running for years. So, yeah, we do have some progressive radio, but and they don't have necessarily the audience that, that you do, but they have, they've got a backup. They've got something to fall back on.
Sure.
Equipment's in place.
You know, and
paid for.
And all of these things, you know, I've come up with this theory that shows will start on the weekend. New shows will premiere on the weekends. People will get a chance to get their feet under them. And as they get more and more comfortable, as long as there are hours in the day for me to do it, I'll try to move them over to the weekly schedule.
Yeah, yeah.
Because every time we succeed in doing that, we put one more voice out there against the, you know, remember, for every second of liberal or progressive conversation, there are 10 of right-wing filth. For every minute, there are 10 minutes. For every hour, 10 hours. For every day, 10 days. For every year, 10 years.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, on frankly, next to nothing, we are a matter of hours away from producing as much original programming as Air America does on a millionth of their budget.
Well, Nova M only does 3 hours a day.
Yeah, but there's some of they're three of the best hours of radio. I mean, it's quality over quantity.
This isn't. I'm not.
No. I understand it.
On Nova AM, but
and,
I'm just saying
we've just got
comparison.
Yeah, we've got a different model here.
Yeah.
We don't have to do the things that others do, and we've proven that we can produce it. We can make it happen. It can be done a different way.
Yeah. Well. I know, what was that, we're not singing to the choir, we're nurturing the choir.
So. You're damn right. Somebody's got to pay attention to the choir.
Yeah, for sure.
You can't spend your life with the choir watching your back.
No, that's true.
And making funny faces at the congregation.
And I'll pass on your altar call. I'll just stand back here at the back of the big room, whatever it's called. But is that the sanctuary or some shit? I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh,
just like a good Baptist to sit on the back row and try to get the plumb spot to get out of the sanctuary and into the cafeteria line before the folks from the Church of Christ. I know you people.
I gotta get to the cookies first, and then and then go over to the cafeteria line. But first, I gotta stop and smoke out on back step. So, yeah, I know where to sit when I have to go to church.
Well, just don't let the deacons see you, okay?
Well, that's where I just...
But then again, you won't run into the deacons till you go to the liquor store.
Yeah, right. And people try to seat me when I go to church, and I just smile, pass them and sit wherever the hell I want right there in that back row on the aisle. So anyway, well, you know, I just back to the Rice Bowl, I get nervous and mistrustful, and I think the universe isn't going to provide, and I just hoard my rice, and I think if people... would just consider how much they have to give and how bountiful this whole, how, you know, how much we really have. And if we just gave away 2 or 3 grains of rice, $5, $10, a $20 bill, anything, just keep it coming in and just, you know, make it, there I go again. Just,
no, but the thing is, I'm going to, part of the reason I said I committed to doing what I did is that, it has always been my ambition, since we started this, to get it all taken care of before the end of the month so that I don't have to do it anyway, so that I don't even have to talk about it. So we're just gonna pretend it's already happened and move on through the month. And I'll start on it again in December.
I know from my own small business experiences that it's almost impossible to play catch up, and we're already 3 months behind. So that's put this whole situation in. I didn't mean to sing a requiem here, but this.
No, it's not a requiem. It's not.
It just puts this whole situation in different light, and it's sort of almost like, well, maybe if the new listeners on iTunes or whatever that is would. They don't have enough history or information, and they just hear say, you know, we need $1,500 more dollars before the end of the, you know, they don't, a lot of people probably don't realize how fragile the thread is without the information.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And maybe the universe wants this whole thing to blow up and make room for something more elegant in mathematical terms. I don't know. I just usually try to.
Yeah, I don't get the I don't get the memo. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, all I.
I'm not on the I'm not on the universal CC list, Kate.
It's a BCC. You're not paying any attention.
Well, yeah, that's the yeah.
But I know people just might consider putting in some money in the plate at the prayer meeting and paying for rent on the porch because this is getting really it's getting really scary. And I logged on today and there's something hinky about my I don't know the IP or the I don't know the something and head on wouldn't load and I thought this is what it feels like oh shit oh well I'm
yeah.
sorry.
That's okay. The beauty of the internet.
So, so, you know, I mean, folks, if you could just put head on your holiday list, I know it's the holiday, but I don't know that that's a real good excuse. If you just put head on your holiday list when you're out buying turkey and stuff or gifts for people that you don't even like and whatever, just put and give Bob a break from the stress so he can give more attention to the family we all say we love and care about so much. I mean, it's time that we start putting rice in other people's bowls. So we're right on the edge, and we either put the rice in somebody else's bowl or we watch the bowl break. It's we're kind of at I call it the catastrophic fold. We're at the point. So whatever. But I do have an idea for a fundraiser.
Okay.
We could make Brooke on who's going to be the last caller. I'm out of here. Good
Get
bye.
Out of here. Thanks for taking my call.
Bye.
Bye. Wow. You inspiring people. And Susan, are you there?
Hi there.
Hey, how are you?
Yep. Oh, well, I'm not as inspiring as Kate, I'm afraid.
Who is?
That's true. Who is?
One of these nights, I'm just going to wait till her late night calling minutes kick in and just, you know, walk away from the microphone.
It will be a fascinating evening. That woman has more to say than most people I've ever run across.
Say more in 5 minutes than most can in a lifetime. Yeah, I know. But that's the story with just about everybody associated with this operation.
Anyway, what you were talking about earlier in the show about the coal going to Atlanta to fuel their air conditioning and their water and so on and so forth struck a chord.
How so?
The state of California has been trying to raid the water out of the Columbia River for decades.
Now, wouldn't they have to kind of get up the borders a bit? I mean,
they just want to run a pipeline up to the Columbia and start pumping.
Oh, geez, that's something straight out of Chinatown.
Tell me about it. Fortunately, we have had a series of governors who have basically said, in all cases, Republican as well as Democrat, over our dead bodies. Thank you, God.
Well, the thing that this brings to light, Susan, is that water and the scarcity thereof is going to it's already become the issue.
Well, it's not only that.
It's tough to live without oil. It's impossible to live without water.
Exactly. But it's not just that. It's first of all, if you build a city in the middle of a desert, you're asking for it.
And if you build a city in the middle of the desert and you put great big fountains all over that city, you are begging, Kate's term, you're begging the universe to take corrective action.
Yeah. And on top of that, at the same time that these people from California were saying, we're short of water, we need to get we need the water from the Columbia River. if you flew over Southern California, here were these mile after mile after mile of swimming pools.
Yeah.
All filled with potable water.
Sure, and all being recirculated via electric pumps.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
And I'm going, well, I see you've still got all these pools full of water. You ain't that hard up.
Oh, no. It, you know, there's there was news of an earthquake down in Chile that struck in the last day or so. 7.8 on the Richter scale, a real humdinger.
Yep.
And
in Chile, they build with stone.
Well, and it brought to mind the cultures that have been there. The oldest cultures, the oldest, you know, full cultures, as opposed to, you know, people living in mud huts and, you know, fighting with the coyotes for what the predators left. Real cultures, you know, home building, that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
Are in that region. And they are uniformly in deserts. But the one thing we know is that they weren't always deserts.
Yeah.
The climate changed on them.
Yeah.
And where they had been able to live and apparently live well enough to build huge ceremonial complexes, news of one of these complexes came out just the other day. These places sit in the middle of deserts, utterly abandoned. And they were abandoned because they became impossible to live in.
Yeah.
The Maya culture collapsed itself because it was so obsessed with burning down its burning down its forest to then create lime to gesso over the temples. They were so obsessed with all of that that they never paid any attention to what was going on in the world around them. All of this is available in Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel. He points out that the same thing happened in Great Britain. One thing created the difference between the collapse and the perpetuation of the two cultures. In Great Britain, they discovered coal.
Yeah. And another example is the Anasazi.
Sure. The Anasazi in the American Southwest. Absolutely. You know,
high culture.
Yeah. Well, where Mexico City stands was an amazing city on a lake. With hundreds of thousands of people living there, and they weren't on the verge of collapse. They might have eventually, but the hills and mountains surrounding the Valley of Mexico were covered in trees. It was cool. It was pleasant. It was comfortable. You know, many Americans have this view of Mexico as, you know, one vast desert. It ain't.
No.
And, but it, but again,
not around Mexico City.
There are examples, especially in North and South America, of what happens to people when they overtax their environment, when they exceed. There's that word that was mentioned on last night's program. When they exceed the carrying capacity of their own land.
Mm-hmm.
And we have approached, and some would argue, passed it in many places. Los Angeles cannot exist but for water out of the Colorado River.
Yeah, and they've drained it. They have literally drained Colorado River. Another place that cannot exist is Las Vegas.
Oh, Las Vegas is... Well, Las Vegas is one of those... Is a great big bird flipped off at the universe.
Yeah. The prime example to me of what happens when you foul your own nest? Look at Easter Island.
Sure, sure.
These people literally wiped out their own environment, and they ended up eating themselves because they no longer have the ability to make the tools to fish. And they were living in what had started out to be an island paradise. And all for their religion.
I saw some travelogue story earlier today, Susan, on an island somewhere in the South Pacific where the people still use stone discs as trade currency. Now, immediately, the Daffy Duck greedy half of me thought, I'm going out to the parking lot and get rich and move to that island. But whether it's, you know, whether it's stone currency or cacao beans, as the North America, ancient Mexica used, or the glass beads or jade or shells or, yeah, gold.
Yeah.
It all only has value because we attach value to it.
Yeah. Because we said, this is valuable. In some societies, it was gold.
Mm-hmm. Human, yeah, human flesh. All, yeah, you know, there's always value attached to it.
Yeah. The whole society was built on the economics of a human being's worth.
All societies are, in the end, aren't they?
Well.
Because we attach a worth to a human being as a peasant, or as a freeman farmer, or a yeoman. Mm-hmm. Or as a merchant, or
but this was their worth as reckoned on the block.
Sure. Well, that's the first half of the American experience, as far as white people are concerned here.
Yeah. And you know, let's face it, they weren't. You know, this wasn't anything new. Slavery's been around for as long as people.
I'm absolutely fascinated with the story that I saw, Susan, about, and I have no idea how to pronounce it. It's V-I-N-C-A, the V-I-N-C-A culture, but it's one of those Eastern European words where it's...
Vinca.
No, it's not the Vinca, because it's got little squiggly marks over different letters. It's one of the, you know how those languages are, a whole bunch of consonants, not a vowel in sight, and it's pronounced Smith. but anyway, this culture existed for 1,500 years. The town finally died out when the furnace burned up and burned down the whole blessed town.
Mm-hmm.
But it's some of the earliest manifestations of art. You know, real art. Obviously, they were working with metals. They were making agricultural tools. They were making weapons. But somewhere along the way, and there's a picture on the news story of a little figurine, and it is female, and she's got a miniskirt on. And a very colorful top. And, of course, immediately I went and I, you know, I'm a geek, so I had to learn more, and I went and I looked it up. And so there it was, the fine folks at Wikipedia. And it says, the Neolithic settlers of ascribed, because I'm Vincha, maybe, I don't know, ascribed great importance to spiritual life as reflected by the enormous number of cult objects, figurines, sacrificial dishes, anthropomorphic and zoomorphic dishes, their artistic and stylistic, but that their spiritual life. You know, the only reason you'd make a figure in a like that with a little cute little skirt and a cute little blouse on it is because of some religious hocus pocus. Because it's a lot easier for me to look at that and think of some guy working around that furnace, burning up, busting his ass, and he's got a little bit of stuff left over. Just a little bit of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And he thinks, you know what? I'm going to take this home to my little girl.
A doll.
It doesn't always have to be associated... That's like the people who go into the caves in southwestern France and northern Spain and say, well, obviously they came, you know, umpty bajillion, they came all the way back into this cave because it was a secret religious ritual. Maybe dude just liked to paint elephants.
Maybe he was trapped in there because of the snowstorm and he was bored.
Bored absolutely out of his skull. And he's sitting there thinking, boy, I sure would like to have me a big old piece of mastodon roasted over a fire right now. And, well, he can't have any mastodon, so he draws one on the wall. And come spring, I'm going to ride me a horse.
By the same token, it could very well be sympathetic magic. Who knows? I wasn't there. I'm old. I'm not that old. But, you know,
But that culture, that little town, that little town in southern Serbia lasted for 1,500 years.
Yeah.
We're not 300 years old yet, this nation. And we feel like we've got we are the beans.
Oh yeah, we're just hot shot. You know, God's great gift to the world. Oh, give me a break.
You know, that culture, the Danubian culture spread all over Europe.
Yeah, I can name you about five cultures right off the top of my head. That if it weren't for the Bill of Rights, topped ours.
Well, and you can probably come up with one culture that, from whence we lifted the Constitution of the United States. The Iroquois Confederacy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a straight-up lift. We took that idea and put it in writing.
Well, of course we did. Let's face it, the Founding Fathers, if nothing else, were a very, very good set of plagiarists.
It was a good idea. Good ideas live.
Yeah. I don't mind. But, you know, as far as our culture being God's great gift to the world, I'll give me a break. What is great about McDonald's?
Well, right. And of course, that's always been the question. What is American culture? Is American culture McDonald's? Is American culture fast food? Is American culture Walmart?
Oh, give me a break. Ugh. American culture is cheap, shoddy plastic.
No, that's Chinese plastic. Culture.
No, that's even before we got into hot China. This is basically the whole American experience.
No, when it came to manufacturing and industrial stuff, we made good stuff once upon a time. We made great shoes, among other things. We made quality textiles. They went all over the world.
Yeah, I'm not talking about manufacturing. I'm talking about our culture. We had a shot at coming up with a great culture with the Quintanilla, with the start of Quintanilla, and people like the Gershwin Brothers. And then somewhere along the line, it just basically went bloop.
Yep, just bloop. Yeah. Well, Susan, thank you very kindly. I appreciate it. You know, I hope folks. I don't know. You know, I get so sick of politics, Susan.
I like to talk about music again.
I get so tired of the horse race. I've got the story here about Senator Clinton and her planted questions.
Oh, who gives a rip? George does it all the time.
Well, and you know, and maybe that's part of what's motivating the discussion of it is that it looks like some Democrat taking plays out of the George Bush playbook.
Yeah,
we think we ought to be smarter than that.
Yeah, but after a while you need a break.
Well, and I assume you guys do too. I mean, there's lots of shows where we can where you can get all the commentary you may ever possibly want to have about what and you know, I do it too. I did it last night about what an unmitigated horse's ass George Bush is. After six and a half, after seven and a half, after 7 years, whatever, I would think that liberals and progressives would have figured that out by now.
Yeah, if you don't know it by now, you're incredibly stupid. But occasionally we need a break. Occasionally we need to sit down and be either talk about music or occasionally we need to sit down and just be silly. Just as a break. Because otherwise we're going to go into a terminal depression and end up hanging ourselves.
The other thing, though, Susan, is that these seeming sidelight stories are actually more important in the long run than who is 5 points up on whom in which poll.
Yes, yes.
Because what's happening to Atlanta, what's happening through the South, there, the droughts come and go regardless of how much carrying pressure you're putting on the land. That's a function of how much rain falls out of the sky.
Exactly.
But how you're able to cope with it is a function of what you've done prior to the drought. You know, and some of this, you know, this is prayer meeting night. Some of this is biblical. Some of this is the Pharaoh's dream as interpreted by Joseph.
Yeah.
In which he saw the fat cattle and the skinny cattle, and he warned the Pharaoh to, you know, put the grain, store it up for the day of famine cometh.
Yeah, and the United States is in the position of, we didn't listen to the dream, and we're going to starve. That simple.
And it's not even dreams anymore, Susan. The Dust Bowl wasn't 100 years ago.
Yeah.
It wasn't 1,000 years ago.
Those who fail to pay attention to the lessons of history are doomed to repeat it.
George Santayana, I believe.
Utter truth.
Absolute truth.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for affirming my determination to spend at least some portion of the program once in a while not obsessing over some horse race.
Oh, God, give me a break.
Then again, maybe we'd be better off obsessing over some horse race. You know, who's 5-1 in the fourth at Hialeah? I don't know.
Yeah, I like horses, the real kind.
I mean, I'm sitting here, I got my Powerball ticket, got some dandy good numbers on it, some of my favorites.
Well, in that case, you're supposed to win the lottery, and that way we can, you know, we can fund the horse.
Then I never have to do this again. I don't mean this. I mean, you know, the please won't you support the? Oh my God!
Hey guys.
Yeah, and by the way,
money.
Yeah, these things are a buck. You know, if it play the lottery, remember us.
Yeah, but in the meantime, pony up some money for the horn. It's not going to kill you.
And if it is,
living on less than $15,000 a year, if we can pony up, so can anybody else.
Yeah, and by the same token, if it is gonna, don't hurt yourself. I have to repeat that over and over again. There are a lot of people out there in this world who will beg and plead and don't give a damn where it comes from. I read a long article about Rex Humbard Jr. last week. And how he used to receive Social Security checks that were just endorsed and mailed on.
Oh no.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I can believe it, but I find it reprehensible. I find it appalling that he would even accept that. Sure we're poor, sure we're hurting, but in any budget there's always a dollar or two laying around. Save it up for a couple of weeks and send it off to the horn. It doesn't have to be much.
No. If every person who listened to this program sent in 10, it would not be necessary for us to ever do this.
It doesn't have to be much.
Well, I've got another blinking light, Susan, so I need to run on. But
give my love to Agnes.
I sure will. And
the kids.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Okay.
Bye now. Wow. Sounds like it's just raining to beat the band outside. Let's go to the phones. Hi. Who have I got?
Oh, my gracious. You've got David in Tennessee.
Oh, hey, David. How are you?
It's my lucky night. I'm right after this call, I'm going straight to Mr. Patel's little convenience store and buy a lottery ticket. Good grief. I've never just dialed and been on. the goddess is smiling. I like this.
So, let's see. What are you going to play the Powerball game, or are you just the local?
Let me see. This is Wednesday. Now, I like the odds better, and it would mean as much to me. We in Tennessee have a thing called Lotto 5, and it's a five-number straight-up game, and the jackpots are nothing like it is for Powerball, but the odds are about 10 times better, which means it's 1 in 5 million as opposed to 1 in 50 million.
Right.
So I feel a lot more confident.
As well you should.
Well, look, I got a couple of things that will sort of kind of knit together here. I, like you, really am disgusted with my favorite thing in the world, National Public Radio, that they have to do some of the things they do, taking some money from some ugly sources. And you're exactly right, and I have to just clench my teeth when you call it Nancy Pelosi Radio or National People's Radio or National Corporate Radio, whatever. But they do, now and then, use that money for some good things. Last night, you did a marvelous, marvelous job of reminding us what we will always owe and never be able to pay to our veterans, and how utterly gut-wrenchingly disgusting it is that George Bush et al. Treats, continues, did then, does now, will, and for years, because it'll take years to fix what they've done to the VA structure. Monday, on NPR, I heard one of their long-format shows, a thing called On Point, and this was Monday the 12th, and it was a very detailed description of what can and what does and what is and what will happen to veterans who have come home only to really be screwed. And it's taken some effort not to say the other word. But if anyone wants chapter and verse on how badly we are and continue to treat our veterans, just Google NPR On Point, the Monday show, NPR, based on a couple of things one of their people did, a guy named Daniel Zwerdling. Very unusual name, Daniel Zwerdling.
Yeah, I'm familiar with him.
A year and a half ago, he did a couple of stories, and then a couple of things broke, and then he went to whoever he reports to and said, I want to follow this wherever it takes me. And for 1 year, this guy has been following veterans, going to their homes, being in Iraq with them, talking to them, and he has amassed 3 or 4 straight hours of programming that is just phenomenally illuminating and enlightening and sickening. We are screwing these people so badly, so often, with malice aforethought. There are officers and there are VA people that, and I've forgotten, I'm disappointed I can't call the exact chapter and verse, but if you can bump a guy, I think it's if you can bump a guy out of the Army and into the VA system, it costs the government about a tenth. Well, maybe it's the other way around. But anyway, they work really hard to set it up so that these people are absolutely just given an apple and a roadmap when they're discharged, because if they behave badly after 2 tours, they're thrown out for bad behavior. There's no diagnosis. They just are cast adrift, and, you know, here, go make a life for yourself, and if you can't, there are bridges all over the nation. Just pick the ones that won't fall on you. It's horrific. And today, just today, this is the other side of this that may give you a bit of levity.
Well, speaking of levity, I'm quickly reminded from our listener, Marty, that you left out National Petroleum Radio.
They're in the mix, too. But now and then, they redeem themselves to some degree and use the money for something good. If you can give a guy that's been in media for 25 years a green light to just go do that story for a year and 2 months, if that can come out of it, there are some redeeming virtues. Not as many as I would like, but there are some. If I say to you the name George Martin, I know the first thing you're going to think of.
Beatles.
Okay, there's a second George Martin. He played football for the New York Giants in the 70s and on into the 80s.
That is true.
He is now 54 years old. He holds the record for total defensive touchdowns by a defensive player. 7.
Okay.
7 as a defensive end. End or tackle, he played both positions. Played for the New York Giants, stayed there after his playing career, born in South Carolina, played college ball at Oregon, you know, Welcome to the Mobile Society. Friends in New York continued to speak about the maltreatment for the first responders, whether they be EMTs, whether they be policemen, whether they be firemen, that responded to the cruelty of 9/11, and they ruined their health. And there's a million ways to speak about that. I think, I didn't see it, but I understand there was a documentary last night about that very topic one more time. Mr. Martin undertook a project. He's in the midst of it right now. He decided that he would, as a 54-year-old man that played 14 years in the National Football League, and luckily I don't think he's had to have any joint replacements, but, you know, you and I as sports fans, we can fill in the blanks of what his hips and knees and ankles are like after 14 years of dealing with that situation.
Moving a little creaky.
He decided, after much thought, and I will say prayer because he is a religious man, he would start a fundraiser. And the basis of the fundraiser would be that he, George Martin, would walk from the Brooklyn Bridge to the West Coast. And the goal is to raise $10 million for the health expenses uncovered by anybody of the first responders. That man has walked from New York City to, he's in Crossville, Tennessee, tonight. He's at $1.5 million, $1.7 million, somewhere along in there. And he thinks by the West Coast, he'll be at $10 million to turn over a trust fund for those people. And at a time, as you and I know, when so many pro athletes are jerks, and there's no way to have a warm fuzzy about any of them, here's a guy that, in relative comfort, said, you know what, I need to take 3 months to work myself into shape, and I need to take 5 to 6 months to get it done. George Martin, at age 54, is going to walk coast to coast. I heard the guy interviewed today, and it was phenomenal. Now, you know, whether anybody contributes, that's secondary issue to me. But the idea that someone like that could make that connection, because he lost friends when the towers came down, because he has stayed in the New York area. And I just, you know, I thought you and I as sports geeks, you might like to hear a positive story about a sports guy, and it also reveals this ugly, nasty side of our country that here's a fireman. His life is ruined. He's asthmatic. He's emphysemic. And he can't perform his duties. He's cashiered out. And suddenly, whatever structure it is that he has, he has no more insurance coverage. And he can't breathe. So,
that is
that reminder. There is this beautiful moment. There is this beautiful crusade by this man. And it's for the, actually, frankly, deplorable reason. He shouldn't have to undertake that mission for that reason.
No, that should have been easily done. That should have been a no-brainer.
Structure in place, heroes should be in the future treated as heroes. They should not be treated as, I'm sorry, Mr. Slutkowski, you don't have any more coverage. Please don't cough anymore. We'll have to call someone to clean the floor. Would you please go out to the parking lot? We can't serve you.
Die somewhere else. People hate to see you die.
That sort of thing should never, ever happen. But there's a guy that's comfortable, and it's only through the fact that he's got a caring heart that he chooses to do this. I guarantee you, no matter how much of an athlete he was when he was 30, to walk 3,200 miles in 5 months, he's doing 25 to 28 miles a day. Every day.
Oof.
He's gonna take 2 days off to work Nashville because he gets here, he's gonna get here in such a situation that he's gonna go to some homeless shelters and he's gonna serve some meals and he's gonna connect with this guy and that guy. So So he doesn't go every single day. But let's just say 5 out of 7 days, he walks 30 miles. Hello? That's pretty damn courageous.
That, well, it is, and I'm sure that the NFL is will capitalize on this somehow or another.
Oh, the NFL Network is coattailing it like crazy.
Sure, because God knows they need somebody like that.
They need some offset. They desperately need some offset.
And the offset is not Tony. Tony Dungy with his, do you know he's got like some sort of daily spiel he does on right-wing religion radio now?
It almost looked like fornication when he went on to Trinity Broadcasting.
Oh, there they are again.
2 weeks later, here's Mark Brick from Georgia and Vince Dooley, that evil old fart. And they're on Trinity, and they're talking about how God directs their football program, and Tony Dungy's wallowing right in the middle of it.
And the Mark Rick Trinity. Vince Dooley thing wasn't that long ago, was it?
No, that was less than a week ago.
Well, Trinity, see, and this takes me back to the front end of the program, David.
Good, I'm glad I did something.
It loops because Mark Rick. Unless I've got this wrong, at some point, Vince Dooley credited Georgia's 1980 national championship. You know, God did that.
Oh, I didn't like that man for a lot of reasons for a lot of years because he was so arrogant and such a nose in the air snot. He could have said that. Sounds like something he'd say.
Here we are.
One of those guys that has God's private number.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're out. I mean, this is the University of Georgia football team, for the love of God. Literally, I guess.
Yeah, well.
And Mark Richt can pray them into a victory over the hated Auburn Tigers, but he forgot to ask God to please make it rain. I mean, have I got the sequence right?
Something like that. I believe you're correct. I was just latching on to the idea that as God, I would be going over my to-do list. Let's see, Darfur, AIDS, and well, that's
Gulf Coast.
Wait a minute, University of Georgia football. Yeah, let me get Dooley on the line.
Yeah, let's work out the over.
Exactly.
That's why I can't treat these people with anything but contempt. You know, every now and then, David, I get the little letter, you know, why do you hate Christians? I don't.
You hate anti-Christian. You hate anti-Christ. You know, who was it? Was it Gandhi? Jesus is fine. Save me from his followers.
Yeah, I like your Christ. I like your. Let's see. I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They are so unlike your Christ.
Okay, thank you. Because I was really whacking it. I was beating that. I was hitting that in the wrong way.
But
that's just me.
How can we treat them with anything but contempt? Sonny Perdue, the governor of Georgia, right winger, the guy who got into office by promising to return Georgia's flag. You know, making sure we get the stars and bars back over the...
Yeah. He doesn't even know the history of that particular flag, but he's going to restore it.
Right. So...
Oh, Lordy.
You know, and the Georgia the Georgia Republican congressional delegation that features people like Gingrey, and then that Jack dude that complained about actually having to go to Washington and work, Republican congressman.
We should be here talking to the people so we can understand how to screw Max Cleveland again.
Right. So Sonny Perdue puts it out that he's having a press conference to pray for rain.
You remember the movie The Rainmaker?
Sure I do.
Why the hell in 2007 when we can do as a nation technologically, why the hell can anybody that oversees the month-to-month, year-to-year fiscal responsibilities of a state as populated as Georgia have any credence rescheduling prayer meeting until there's a damn rain falling so he can jump in front of the parade? What the heck?
Well, but isn't there something in the book of Matthew or somewhere along the way, David, about if you would speak to the Father, go into your closet, pray, say what you got to say, get it over with, and get on with it. The hypocrites pray loudly in the streets; they have their reward. I mean, do these people read the confounded book that they worship?
No, they don't.
I guess not.
No.
You know, and who's going to be who would be standing there with Sonny Perdue? Creflo Dollar?
Or maybe that Eddie Long that got busted off TBN. I shouldn't say that. It's my theory that you don't see Bishop Eddie Long on TBN quite as much as you once did, because I must admit it's a guilty pleasure. I have two or three of those in my life. I go and I watch these charlatan hucksters do their thing, because there are great performing tips that
with you know with either three fingers or 12 ounces of something really tasty.
Bishop Long, as he prefers to be addressed, I'm not kidding you, for two or three days in a row, because this stuff was tape delayed only by a day or two, for two or three or four days in a row, because when I first saw it, I went, wait a second, I know what that's about. And I watched two or three more days, and he was in the same state, and then, boom, Bishop Long was not on quite as much as he had been. Then he was on almost not at all. I guarantee you, I'll bet you fingers off my left hand, and I'm left-handed, he was so loaded he couldn't make sentences. He was crippled by some substance in addition to alcohol. He was making animal noises. I'm serious. He sentences...
Braying like a donkey, that kind of stuff?
Well, not quite. It didn't, you know, there's a certain cadence that tips off the sheep that they're doing the speaking in tongues bit. Well, this was not like that. This was slurred, and this was ugly, and he was wiping the corner of his mouth with the back of his hand as he would, like, you know, wet his chin with it. It was absolutely pathetic, and suddenly Mr. Long was not as available on television as he had been previously, and now then he's got what's his nuts in Iowa checking out his finances just a little bit, which may or may not mean anything. But no, it's just disgusting. And we've drifted so far from a nice man walking 3,200 miles.
But we drift. This is a program that is adrift. We drift and we like.
We are you and I. Never mind the we that listens. Never mind the we that signs into the chat room. You and I are nothing if not tangential. And that's the word for the day.
It is, and it comes in bucketfuls, those tangents.
We have it in stock. And we can get more shipped in before anybody can buy
any
it.
Any color you want, any size you need, we got it.
You pick a topic, I can jump off of it and go for 20 minutes before you can say anything.
Well, I got a quick PM from one of the chatters in the chat room when they heard your voice. Yay, David!
Oh, come on now. Oh, geez, they must be bored tonight.
No. That's what makes this fun. Look, David, I mean, deal with it. This is not like any other kind of radio going out there at all. There is nobody doing what happens on the horn. And that's, you know, that's part of that morbid fear I was talking about, where I get to take the little, you know, long walk off the longer bridge. Somewhere down the road, this is going to be brilliant.
Yeah, in 18 moons in the future, when you're either chopping wood or wearing a yellow vest with a smiley face, somebody comes on to your 13-inch black and white reminding you that somebody has done what you did 5 years prior, and they're smart. Oh, I know. Hopefully.
Yeah, the PM just popped up again. I live to be bored by David.
Oh, dear chat room person, you are too kind. I've got to get off my job at 1.9 and so I can go play in the chat room so I don't bore people talking on the radio. I need to teach myself how to update my job at 1.9 so that I don't get thrown out of chat every time I try to log in.
It can be done.
I can be taught. It takes extra effort. It takes extra effort.
Well, some people out there are cranky about when they want to learn how to do these things.
Oh, Lord, that's the story of my life.
That's what I meant.
What you just said, he's cranky about when he wants to learn something. And where the other sex is concerned, my life is dominated by a wonderful play that appeared in Chicago.
Don't say sex and dominated in the same sentence. It's a family program.
All
please.
Right. Well, all right. Time out. Starting over. A wonderful play in Chicago that was typified by its title, You're Perfect, I Love You, Now Change. I starred in that a couple of times. And the last time the casting call went out, I declined the offer.
Didn't want to go on the tour.
Nope. Been there, done that, threw the T-shirt away.
Yeah, too many seasons in summer stock. All right, David, take care.
Oh, Bob, that's perfect. Oh, that's perfect. Yes, I get out of the way now.
All right, later.
Bye.
Our good friend David in Middle Tennessee. We're a little late for the news. Story of my life. We'll be okay anyway, so we'll take the news, come back. You want to get in on this? It's prayer meeting. There's no better time for it. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Quality News Network. In Washington, D.C., the U.S. Justice Department will take a new look at a dormant inquiry into the federal warrantless wiretap program. Rekindling of the investigation indicates a major shift in policy just days after new Attorney General Michael Mukasey took office. Investigators were denied security clearance last year, forcing the inquiry to be shelved. $1.6 trillion is the cost a Democratic committee has put on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. A report released today includes so-called hidden costs, like long-term health care for veterans and interest payments on money borrowed to fight the war. The U.S. military is pulling 3,000 soldiers out of the Diyala province, taking the edge off of last summer's controversial 30,000 troop increase. Most of the brigade will be home by Christmas. Four Turkish soldiers were killed in battles with Kurdistan Workers' Party guerrillas as Turkey sent special forces to the region bordering northern Iraq. Turkish officials have threatened an incursion into northern Iraq to root out rebels using the mountains as a base for further border attacks. Two people were killed, 10 injured when a bomb exploded at the Philippines House of Representatives. The blast killed Congressman Wahab Akbar, who reportedly had ties to an Islamic extremist group.
Iran is handing over a set of blueprints showing how to mold uranium metal into the shape of warheads. The release of the documents meets a key demand of the UN nuclear agency. While an upcoming UN report may say that Iran is cooperating, it may not be enough to stop the call for a third set of UN sanctions against that country. South Korea is asking the U.S., China, and North Korea to begin negotiations aimed at producing an official peace treaty to replace the armistice ending the Korean War 5 decades ago. Israeli President Shimon Peres and Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas are both in agreement that the upcoming Middle Eastern peace conference is an historic opportunity and that failing to reach agreement would mean more trouble for that region. The conference is set for Annapolis, Maryland, later this year. And Pakistani police rounding up supporters of former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto, throwing them in jail, saying they're violating the government's ban on public gatherings. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a look at science and business news just ahead.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, "We must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of a good light." This is the essence of civility. When we are civil to strangers, when we defer at the intersection instead of racing out ahead, when we hold the door for someone we don't know, when we smile at someone who catches our eye, we declare our choice for a civilized society. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
The world's smallest bear faces extinction. Poaching and deforestation in its southeastern Asian home put the sun bear in the vulnerable category by the World Conservation Union. An estimated 10,000 sun bears remain on Earth, their habitat stretching from India to Indonesia. In business, President Bush vetoed legislation which would fund job training, education, and health programs. It is the sixth veto of his administration and the latest in a battle with Democratic Congress over domestic spending. Mr. Bush says the current U.S. economy remains strong despite taking some recent hits. He cited higher oil prices and a sagging housing market during a TV interview on Fox Business News this morning. Mr. Bush says he expects the U.S. dollar to, quote, rise on the back of a resilient economy. The nation's biggest retailer, Walmart, announcing third-quarter profit rising almost 8%, beating estimates. International sales also increased 17%. Company raised its full-year outlook heading into the holidays. Bank of America will take a $3 billion write-down in the fourth quarter, warning its losses could eventually be even worse. Light sweet crude oil trading at $91.17 a barrel at today's close of Wall Street. The Dow way up 319 points to end at 13,307. NASDAQ up 89 points. S&P 500 also up 41. More at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty then. About 25 minutes past the hour, at least here. God knows what time it'll be by the time the stream reaches you. That's the downside, you know, the latent delay. Quick email in from our pal Cindy in the Great Northwest. When we bought this house in 1995, well, she's the subject line, I live next door to a mansion. She says, when we bought this house in 1995, we were at the end of a county road. After the road stopped, there was a drop-off of about 400 feet to the bottom. We figured nobody would ever be able to put a road to the next mountain. Sure enough, some rich folks from San Francisco bought that mountain and built a road. It took 3 years to build the road and 3 years to build the house. They put up a 38,000 square foot house. Not 3,800, Bob. More like a big box store, if you can imagine the size. 38,000 square feet. I swear, Bob, that much cash and that much space and three people live there. It's the biggest house in the county, and they're the richest family here, and they're next door to me. Still, every summer when the water in the town well goes dry, they come over here and ask for water. We fill their tank and send them on their way. It's nice to have a clean well, isn't it? That's why we bought this house, to be independent of the system. By the way, our house is small, only about 2,300 square feet. It used to be the biggest in the area. Thanks, Cindy. And, of course, the other side of this, 38,000 square feet house, those three people, they still feel cramped because they can't stand each other. If you dig deep enough into a lot of this stuff and you look for the real reason, it's people not knowing how to live with each other. People who live in cold, cold climates and people who live in cramped quarters learn to get along or die. That's what these giant houses are. What's the first thing that happens when the kid from Busted Knuckle gets drafted into the NFL in the first round? Big ass house for one, maybe two people. Because he doesn't know how to live inside his own skin. Right? I think so. Let's go straight to the phones. Our good friend Alan is calling from the open road. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hello, I'm calling you from Cuba.
Cuba, are you?
Missouri.
Oh, Cuba, Missouri. Missouri. Okay. Is that near Mexico, Missouri? I know there's a Mexico, Missouri, and a California, Missouri, too.
Yeah, it's pretty close to St. James, Missouri. You might have heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
Not too far from St. Louis. I guess maybe about 100 miles, maybe, St. Louis.
Yeah.
West of St. Louis, from I-44.
Okay.
Nice little town. They had a lot of murals painted on the buildings. They had Amelia Earhart laying there one time. I think she ran out of fuel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The reason why I called you is, have you heard about the tax credit for solar panels being dropped out of the energy bill?
Yes. And I don't... Did it get dropped, Alan? Have you heard the latest on it?
I went to Daily Coast, an article I read, and it sounded like it was dropped out by Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, if I understood correctly, and that just really blew my mind.
That was the same thing that I read, and I could not believe my eyes.
I called both of their offices.
Well, did you get any kind of a satisfactory answer?
Not really. Harry Reid, I had to leave a message on the machine. And also, I called my senators from Alabama, which are Republicans, and I think I got probably a better response from them.
I read this, I guess maybe it was Thursday of last week I read this, and they were saying, you have to act on this now because it's due to die tomorrow or today, and I haven't seen any follow-ups. I'm glad you brought it up, Alan, because it's another classic case of us going in the wrong direction as quickly as we possibly can get there.
I know, and the scientists were saying, I heard today the scientists were saying that it's just like suicidal if we just keep on going the same path that we're doing with the environment.
It is suicidal. It is cultural. It is societal suicide. You know, the business I was talking about with the South being fueled on Appalachian coal, there are a couple of regions in the United States where, for heaven's sakes, you'd be dumber than a bag of doorknobs to not go solar. And the Deep South and the Southwest are those two places.
Yeah. So I hear that alternative energy stocks are really doing good, so why not give them a boost so they can do even better?
Because this is what happens when you let the oil fields
the mountains and go to alternative energies. The mountain tops don't drop back.
And that points it all. That points it all up, Alan. The mountains don't matter. They just don't matter. That we are so far beneath the concern of people that, you know, it's why even bother thinking about solar? It's not even worth thinking about saving money, which is what that alternative energy tax credit was all about, was saving Americans some money. But, you know, I mean, you know how this stuff happens, though, right, Alan? A certain call gets placed to a certain Speaker of the House or a certain Senate Majority Leader by a certain lobbyist for a certain energy cooperative or consortium or corporation.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, that tax credit's gone. It's the same mindset that's behind killing that tax credit is the mindset that is behind keeping me from being able to buy green energy to run this network on.
I just wonder if it's too late for people to call tomorrow. People who are listening to the show.
It would behoove whether they call or not, Alan. It would behoove people to do some quick research and find out what the status is, at least.
Yeah.
It's insanity.
Yeah. I mean, solar and wind, that's what we have to save the planet. Also, wave energy.
There's a lot of deep thinking going on out there that could save us. But, you know, as long as I've come to the conclusion, Alan, that maybe some of us on an individual basis can do something about it in our own private lives, but that culturally or nationally, however you want to describe it, we are not going to do anything until it is forced upon us, and then there will be great, great weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, such as you hear in Georgia right now.
Yeah, that's just what I've been thinking about a lot. It's just like a person who needs to make a change in their lives. Either they make the change voluntarily, which Jimmy Carter tried to get us to do, and by waiting, it makes it a lot worse. And I think we're making it a lot worse by waiting on these issues, like we've done for the last 30 years with Ronald Reagan and bringing us back to coal and oil and all that mess.
It's the grasshopper and the ant, Alan, and we are. Our government is unfortunately controlled entirely by the grasshoppers.
Yeah, agreed. This goes back to religion. We human beings are a lot more smarter than this. It's just, there's more, like I said, there's more of us than them, and we should do something about it.
Well, we're trying. You know, we talk about it, and
somebody called the Tom Lauer Show about this issue today, and just real quick, and then called away. So just call your senator, and that was it. Then they went to another issue.
So that was today, and they were saying call it. That was today, and they were saying call your senator.
Yeah, Tom Hartman said call your senator, but he should have spent more time on this issue, I think. And he has a lot bigger audience than you, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Well, let's find out what we can about this, Alan. I'm sure somebody is out there already Googling away trying to find out, and will let me know just as quick as they themselves find out.
Yeah, if it's not too late, call the senator tomorrow. Call your senator and call several senators that have something to do with this issue like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid.
Well, sad to say, it would be a wasted phone call. I'll make it anyway. It's going to be a wasted phone call on my part, because if it doesn't burn coal, my senators and my congressmen don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah. I always wonder, what about the senator from West Virginia, your senator, Bird, what does he think about this mountaintop removal?
Oh, they can't remove mountaintops fast enough to satisfy him.
Shoot. He was against the war. I thought he was a pretty good guy. So not where getting
in the way of Almighty God Cole is concerned, Alan.
So he's off of a coal dollar, yes.
Oh, that's why he's coal. He's coal fueled.
Uh-huh. Well, they had a they talked today on the
Democracy Now! About that woman from West Virginia that got was kidnapped.
Yeah.
Black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one total situation there. They told her story on the radio there. It was pretty bad.
Oh, it's awful, and it's not. And you know, the fact of the matter is, had she been a white woman, it would have gotten more coverage than Natalie Holloway did a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh. Oh, we've hardly heard anything about it on the regular news.
No.
I don't listen too much.
Well, again, you know, it's she's got two strikes against her, West Virginia and African American.
Oh, well, they won't put it down as a hate crime, I hear.
No, they won't.
Well, I guess I better let you get to other callers, and I'll better pay attention to my driving.
Well, stay safe, and by all means, you know, keep an ear out. If you hear anything more about this issue, shoot me an email, would you?
All right, thank you.
All right, take care, Alan.
Bye.
Bye now. Driving through the wilds of Missouri, our good buddy Alan. And Juanita is on the phone. Hey, Juanita, welcome to the program. Thanks
Hi.
For calling. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, getting along.
I just I understand this is a prayer meeting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, every Wednesday night.
Okay. I got a couple of things I'd like to discuss, and maybe I don't know if I come from a different point of view or not, but I've had, prayer has been an evolution for me,
mm-hmm.
because I had to come at it from a different point of view from a lot of people, but I won't go into that. I do have a confession, if I may.
Okay, confession's good on prayer meeting, too.
Okay, I've evolved since 2000 in my way of looking at things, you know. I did not like the man. I didn't want him. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, that's me. But I watched all of that. See, with the elections, it's like my daddy came back to life, you know, because we were so into that, the elections, and my daddy was really a staunch Democrat, you know.
Right.
And he called Eisenhower Eisenhower.
That's good.
Anyway, you would have really liked him. He was very outspoken. Anyway, it's like my dad, and just it's like bringing him back with me since 2000, and I've changed so much. But the thing was that I watched all the things that went on. I watched all the trials. I watched the Supreme Court trial. I mean, I listened to the Supreme Court trial. You couldn't watch it. And I, you know, had all of that. And something kept telling me to keep a diary of all of that, you know, to journalize it.
Right.
But you know what? I said, I don't think that'd be... I'm saying this to myself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that'd be very Christ-like of me. That's what I'm confessing to. Of course, now I see I was wrong. See, I didn't know that was me. That was tradition, you know.
Sure.
Like you were talking about the Southern Baptist guilt. Well, mine came from way back yonder, Hartshell Baptist guilt, and then I was in the Southern Baptist at one time, and boy, do I know guilt, believe me. And that's my confession, because I think I could have made a lot of good use of all those things. Now I just have to remember what I heard, you know, because I didn't write it down.
Yeah.
That's my confession, and I do repent, okay?
Yeah, and, you know, you learned from it, didn't you, Juanita?
Yes. And then another one is, you were talking about, I don't know the details about, I'm like you about politics now, I just have to get away from it sometime. So you know, there's so much going on, you can't really keep up with everything now like you could. But, you were talking about a guy from, the governor of Georgia?
Yes, Sonny Perdue.
Pray, but he wants to pray for at the right time?
Right.
Was he waiting on the weatherman or what?
Really, he is.
Oh, that's a new one.
He wants it to start raining while he's praying.
Oh, gee. Oh my goodness gracious.
That's how simple and gullible he thinks the people of Georgia are.
Uh oh. Well, what is the rain? How's the rain supposed to help them?
Well,
where's it supposed to come from? I mean, where's it supposed to rain? At a certain place, at a certain time.
Well, long as it rains on Sonny while he's praying, he figures he got the job done.
Okay. Well, I'd like to tell you about a little article that I saved. That you know how the newspapers would let people write in little articles.
Sure.
I don't know if they still do or not.
Yeah, letters to the editor and so forth, sure.
It's not letters to the editor. It's like little short stories.
Oh, okay.
That they can write in. And some of them are really good, and one of them I saved. And I call it The Wrong Prayer. And I'll try to recap it because I think you'll find this interesting. You know, you have to really, I've learned you have to really be careful how you pray about things and, in my opinion, that's my opinion, you know. But this guy he called it Tell Ended Differently for Boys on Scheherazade. And he was 15, and he was, I think they lived in New York. He was Jewish, and he was going to high school, and he was studying in German. And into his life, this 20-year-old woman came from Germany, well-to-do, beautiful and everything, and she told him she could teach him German and he could teach her English. You know, they helped one another out. Well, of course, he fell for her. He was a very beautiful, very sweet, very nice person.
Mm-hmm.
So one day, this somebody that, I don't know if he was related to him or not, this 30-year-old guy came and started romancing her. And he, you know, of course, he couldn't stand that. And he thought that this was the most disgusting man because all he wanted to do, you know, he thought, well, he just wanted to make money because he'd ask him, why are you always reading, you know, why don't you put on weight, you know, when are you going to start shaving and all that kind of stuff. So he just didn't really like him, and he thought, well, this guy's just not right for her. But despite that, they started going out together, and they got engaged. And he said, I did something I had never done before. I prayed. And he prayed that she wouldn't marry him. Well, something happened. They broke up. And she went back to Germany because someone in her family was sick. Well, this was in the 30s. So you know what happened.
Sure. Oh.
He prayed. He said, and he said the guy that he didn't like turned out to be a pretty good guy. After all, the wife he had he treated her really nice, and his children were crazy about him. But she died in a concentration camp. And he thought, if I had not prayed so hard, how bad would things have been? To me, that really means something.
Sure.
I thought this was just such a great little story.
And it is. It is. And you know, it's what I said. It's the unintended consequences.
And it's something that makes you think. To me, it makes you think you have to really be careful. We don't know how to run this world, you know.
No, we don't, Juanita, but we can certainly look at people and know that they are running it wrong.
That's
we can spot
in
that
in the name of God and what God, I don't know.
That's
you
the
know.
Key. What God? Well, Juanita, thank you very much, dear.
Okay, and I just would you like me to send you that article?
I'd like to see that.
Okay. Do you get any of my emails? Because
yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I will send it to you.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Juanita.
It's a keepsake for me.
All right. Will do.
Okay. Thank
Wonderful.
You.
Wonderful. You take
good
care.
Night.
Have a good night.
You
bye-bye.
Too.
A couple of last little things as we wind the program out. Like I said last night, and I promised I would get to it, I don't often get requests for readings, you know, it's not, I'm not Madam Bob palm reader or anything, so I don't do readings. But this was passed along to me, and I had intended to get to it last night. But, you know, it remains relevant. It's a piece written by a fellow by the name of Brian Turner from a New York Times opinion segment called Home Fires. Brian Turner, in particular, is a poet. He served 7 years in the Army. He was an infantry team leader in 2004 in Mosul with the 3rd Striker Brigade Combat Team, 2nd Infantry Division. And this piece that he wrote is profound, at least in my humble estimation. It's called Requiem for the Last American Soldier to Die in Iraq. And Brian Turner writes, "At some point in the future, soldiers will pack up their rucks. Equipment will be loaded into huge shipping containers. C-130s will rise, wheels up off the tarmac, and Navy transport ships will cross the high seas to return home once again. At some point, the timing of which I don't have the slightest guess at, the war in Iraq will end. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I've been thinking about the last American soldier to die in Iraq. Tonight, at 3 a.m., a hunter's moon shines down into the misty ravines of Vermont's Green Mountains. I'm standing out on the back deck of a friend's house listening to the quiet of the woods. At the Fairbanks Museum in nearby St. Johnsbury, the lights have been turned off for hours, and all is dark inside the glass display cases filled with Civil War memorabilia, the checkerboard of Jefferson Davis, smoothbore rifles, canteens, reading glasses, letters written home. 4 or 5 miles outside of town, past a long stretch of water where the moon is crossing over, a blue and white house sits on a small clearing not far from where I stand now. Chimney smoke rises from a fire burned down to embers. A couple spoon each other in sleep, exhausted from lovemaking. One of them is beginning to snore. I want them to wake up and make love again, even if they need the sleep and tomorrow's workday holds more work than they might imagine. Who can say where that last soldier is now, at this very moment? Kettleman City, Turlock, Wichita, Fredericksburg, Omaha, Duluth. She may be in the truck idling beside us in traffic as we wait for the light to turn green. He may be ordering a slice of key lime pie at Denny's, sitting at a booth with his friends after bowling all night. What name waits to be etched on a stone not yet erected in America? Somewhere out in the vast stretches of our country, somewhere out in Whitman's America, out among the wide expanse of grasses, somewhere here among us, the last soldier may lie dreaming in bed before the dawn as the sun sets over Iraq. At the Spar in Tacoma, Washington, the bartender, Jolene, is about to flip the lights for last call. Let her wait a moment longer. If she can wait a few minutes more, the young woman at the end of the bar will finally do what she's been wanting to do for hours, and it will surprise the young man she's been talking with. She'll kiss him. It will never be seen on a movie screen or written down in a book for people to enjoy centuries later. No one at the bar will even notice it taking place, but they should, because it's one of the all-time best kisses ever. As cheesy and hyper-romantic as it sounds, this is a kiss for the ages, and it's as good as they get. Let the quiet moments of a life be recognized and not glossed over with thoughts of the past or thoughts of the future. For a rare, brief moment, let this moment be savored and fully lived. Maybe that soldier will drive a thresher in the Kansas sun today. Maybe she'll cheer at a Red Sox game as her husband laments the fate of his Yankees. Maybe he's in Hollister, California, thinking of the 100 things he'd written as a child, the list he titled, Things to Do Before I Die. Write a book. Travel down the Amazon. Travel down the Nile. Visit each continent. Live in a foreign country. Learn to speak foreign languages. Be a Major League Baseball player. Publish in Playboy magazine. Ride a motorcycle across America. Cross the ocean by boat. Scuba dive. Climb a mountain. Go to every Major League Baseball park, especially Yankee Stadium. Be a tourist on a moon mission with NASA or another space agency. Ride on an elephant and a camel. Visit Angkor Wat, the Taj Mahal, the Great Wall, the Hermitage, the Louvre, Stonehenge. Invent something useful and helpful for people. Number 18, and on and on. How many items will he have crossed off that list before he must put it away again? Could that last soldier be in front of a video camera in Hollister right now, recording a final message in case she doesn't make it back, making a videotape for a child who will never know its own mother? If you're watching this, then it means I'm not around anymore. I imagine you're probably in your late teens now. Maybe Mount Kilimanjaro no longer has snow on its peak. Maybe the ice shelves on the northern coasts of Alaska have melted back and polar bears are dwindling in number. I always wanted to get up there and see Alaska. Maybe you'll make it up there one day yourself. I wonder if it's somehow possible for you to buy a plane ticket to Baghdad, to visit Iraq as a tourist. Will you visit the places where I've been? Will you talk to the people there? Will you tell them my name? What will the name be? Anthony, Lynette, Fernando, Paula, Joshua, Letitia, Roger. Who will carve it in stone, and who will leave flowers there as the years pass by? Who will remember this soldier, and what will those memories be? Does he have brothers and sisters? Will his father sink into the grass in the backyard when he's told the news? Will his mother stare into the street with eyes gone hollow and vacant, the cars passing each day with their polished enamel reflecting the sunlight? What will the officer say when he knocks on that door? The next time I'm waiting for a transfer flight in Dallas or Denver or in Chicago, I'm going to make a point to watch for soldiers in uniform. If one of them is eating alone and watching football on a wall-mounted television, I'll anonymously pick up the check for them, like someone did for me once when I was in my desert fatigues and preparing to deploy overseas. Maybe, just maybe, as I stand here in the quiet moonlight of Vermont, the American who will one day be the very last American soldier to die in Iraq. Maybe that soldier is doing a night jump in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Each parachute opens its canopy over the darkness below. The wind an exhilaration, a cold rush of adrenaline, the jump an exercise in being fully alive and in the moment. A way of learning how it feels to fall within the rain, the way rain itself falls, to be a part of it all, the earth's gravity pulling us with its inexorable embrace. Thanks, everybody. thanks for joining me for prayer meeting. Peter Godbold's up next with Strictly Confidential, followed by Joe Vecchio and the Cup of Joe Late Night. And then at midnight Eastern, John Fox, and All Foxed Up. All of it right here on the Horn. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Bobby.
This is the Quality News Network. Despite a White House veto threat, House Democrats moved ahead with a $50 billion spending bill, funding meant for the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. The legislation includes a call for U.S. troops to begin withdrawing from Iraq in the next 30 days of its passage. The headquarters of Iraq's most influential Sunni cleric group taken by storm today. Iraqi authorities seized the office held by the Association of Muslim Scholars, accusing the group of publicly supporting Sunni insurgent goals and al-Qaeda in Iraq. Attorney General Michael Mukasey officially sworn in today during a formal ceremony performed by U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts at the Justice Department. It was the second swearing-in held for the former federal justice selected to replace former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. A newly issued report from federal investigators says that the shooting deaths of at least 14 Iraqi civilians in Haditha were unjustified. Security guards from Blackwater, USA being blamed for those deaths, which authorities now say violated rules of deadly force. Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf says he intends to step down from his military post by the end of the month. He says he'll run for re-election as president of Pakistan as a private citizen when balloting is held in February. President Bush has encouraged the latest move, but also wants Musharraf to end martial law and hold elections at their earlier scheduled time in early January. The prime ministers of North and South Korea met in Seoul today for the first talks between the two nations in 15 years. Diplomatic discussions are seen as a major step towards reconciliation between the two countries after nearly six decades. Day two of commuter confusion.